Hello, this is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator for this evening's telephone town hall. I'm here with State Senator Judy Schwenk and her guests, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Schwenk or any of her guests this evening, you can press star 3, that's star 3 on your phone's keypad, if you have a question for Senator Schwenk or any of her guests. Now I'd like to welcome Senator Judy Schwenk.
Thank you, Hugh, and good evening, everyone, on this unseasonably cool and rainy May evening. I'm glad you're joining us tonight. You know, I expect a lot of people to be asking questions, and actually I want to get to more of your questions if we possibly can, particularly for those of you with unemployment concerns. And it's possible that we're not going to get to everyone. So if you are a constituent of the 11th District and you have a question that we don't answer, please go to my website, which is www.senatorschwenk.com/contact. In fact, if you just go to the website, it pops right up on the screen. And if you don't have internet access, just leave a message at our office number. We're pulling those off daily. And the number is 610-929-2151. So I wanted to get that out there right away because we really do want to get to your questions. But I'm also very delighted tonight to have two special guests with us. And, you know, we all know what the symptoms of the coronavirus are, right, by now. But it's time, I believe, we start thinking about, you know, what will the next phase of the coronavirus pandemic look like, particularly for us in Berks County. So I have invited two special guests. One is Dr. Deborah Powell. Dr. Powell is the Section Chief of Infectious Diseases, and she's also the Medical Director for Infection Prevention for Tower Health, Reading Hospital. And we're also very pleased to have Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry Secretary Jerry Oleksiak. And he's going to answer some questions on unemployment compensation. And also joining us, I'm happy to say too, is Susan Dickinson from the Secretary's office. She's a director of the Office of Unemployment Compensation, I believe Policy and Benefits. And so we've got the experts here tonight, folks. And the format that we have will allow you to listen in and, you know, call in and ask questions as well if you would like to. So let me start by just asking our guests to say a few words while we kind of line up the calls. And I'll start with Dr. Powell. Dr. Powell, thank you so much for joining us.
This is my pleasure. So just a brief, go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, so what are you seeing and what can you tell us about what you think the future is going to look like here?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So as we're all well aware, we're in the middle of this global pandemic. It's caused by this novel coronavirus that we call COVID-19. This outbreak first started in Wuhan, China in late December, and it's really amazing how fast this has spread over the entire globe. We're now seeing 3.7 million cases worldwide, and even in Berks County, we're seeing over 3,000 cases with 148 deaths. So I want to thank your constituents for helping us to flatten the curve. What we're seeing within the hospital setting is we can keep up, which is our biggest fear. When we saw New York and Italy's numbers, they couldn't keep up with the surge of patients that needed care. So we have enough ventilators, we have enough ICU beds, and we have actually plateaued, which is reassuring. So I want to thank your constituents for doing their part, but to say we can't let up now. Where this is going, I think it's going to be a slow change for us back to a new normal, where people will be going out in public for probably months until we get a vaccine developed that can protect the entire society. Because right about now, we only have about 5 to 7% of the population probably exposed and have developed antibodies. So I think it's going to be a change. I don't think we're going to change back to the prior normal. I think it's going to be a new normal of smaller groups, no large group settings, and getting businesses back on their feet again.
So it's going to be like flicking a dimmer switch, not a regular light
That's
switch,
correct.
Right?
With
yeah, the lights are going to go on gradually.
Yep, I agree with you.
Well, okay. So that gives us some possibilities on some questions to ask you. And now I'll turn to the Secretary. Secretary Olisiak, you've done a lot of these calls for some of my colleagues, and you are one of the busiest guys in Harrisburg right now. What are some thoughts you can offer?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be with you, Senator, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your constituents. We have been very busy, our entire team at Labor and Industry. Basically, I want to give you some numbers, and I'll put them in context, but we went from record low unemployment in Pennsylvania to a record high unemployment, and it was using that analogy of the light switch. It was like the light switch went on. It happened within days, weeks. The 3 weeks before the mitigation efforts began, we had a total of 40,000 new unemployment claims in Pennsylvania. And in less than 3 weeks after those mitigation efforts went into effect, we went over a million new unemployment claims. And as of this morning, I just checked, we had over 1.7 million new unemployment claims in Pennsylvania since March 15th. When you add to that the claims we've gotten from the PUA, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, which is a separate part of the Federal CARES Act, and that's set up for people who have not traditionally been eligible for unemployment, people who are self-employed, independent contractors, gig workers, 1099s, people that get 1099s from the IRS. So those people have been able to file as well. And so that's another 160 plus thousand. So we have over 1.9 million claims since March 15th. Mm-hmm. And again, to keep that in perspective, we've paid out in traditional benefits about $4 billion. And I'm sorry, that's total benefits, $4 billion in traditional benefits and $1.4 in the extra $600 from the federal government. So basically, we've got 1.9 million claims and we've paid out $5.4 billion. Now, what I tell people when I do these is, those are great statistics, but they don't mean anything if you're on the wrong side of those statistics, if you are still having trouble or not receiving benefits. And, you know, we care very much about our fellow citizens. We all have, at L&I, we have family members who have been impacted by this. I have it in my own family. All of our citizens have been impacted, if not medically, certainly financially and emotionally. So we understand how difficult it can be and how frustrating it can be. So we're doing all we can. We've brought back 70 retirees at unemployment. We've to help answer phones and emails. We've reassigned about 500 people from other state agencies, and we're getting them trained and ready to go. We have hired about 120 new intermittent intake interviewers, our triple I's, that are the first ones to receive calls and review claims. We have gotten some virtual assistance from Watson, the artificial intelligence that IBM uses, that's answered 120,000 calls. So we have been extremely busy implementing not just the traditional system, but also the two parts of the Federal CARES Act that are, there's actually three parts, two parts that are just about ready to go. One that is, we are using, is the $600 extra benefits that people have been getting. And the second one is the pandemic unemployment assistance for those independent contractors and self-employed. We've been accepting applications on that, and that system should be ready to begin paying benefits, we're hoping, early next week.
Okay.
So we've been doing a lot, and yes. I'm happy to take calls.
I appreciate it so much. So, Hugh, I know we have a couple of questions already lined up. I'll go back to you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. And just a reminder for those that have just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Schwenk or any of our guests tonight, you can press *3. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, our first caller tonight is going to be Tammy. Tammy, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi. Hi. How are you?
Great. How are you doing? Good.
Okay. He kind of answered my question. I am a self-employed hairstylist and salon owner. I do not have any employees. He kind of answered my questions about the PUA to go on there, mm-hmm. but I was not able to to get through. Like once I got to the point about making a PIN number for yourself, I couldn't. It wouldn't work.
Okay, secretary.
And I want to know: do I apply? Am I able to get assistance through that?
Well, I'm going to have to speak to this because with the PUA system, there is no PIN that's involved. So if the caller may have, Tammy may have applied through the regular system, and if she's self-employed, that wouldn't work. So, Susan, can you speak to that application process a little bit, please?
Sure. So with the new PUA system, it's interesting. It's quite different from our regular unemployment system, where there is a dashboard. Once you file your claim, you have a dashboard where you can go and do everything that is related to your claim. It's very self-service, very user-friendly, so that you can see a lot of things that are happening with your claim. So when it comes to registering with the site, it's just like registering, for example, with your bank, where there's a username and a password that you give it. It's not assigned to you. It's whatever you make up. So that is how you gain access to it. I'm also not sure about the PIN, just because there's no PIN with the PUA program. So I'm can't exactly speak to what particular error you may have been seeing. But I will say that there are three possible ways to get assistance. First of all, there is an email address. We have about 25 of our tax staff who are checking the PUA email. It's ucpua@pa.gov. And again, that's ucpua@pa.gov. And that is just for PUA questions. That's not for regular unemployment questions. So if you're having an issue, you can ask about it through that email address. Starting next week, we will also have a PUA phone number where you can call and get assistance with your PUA claim. So if you need someone to walk you through the filing of it, that would be where you could call. And we are actually currently training about 70 staff from the Department of Revenue to take those calls. They were in training yesterday. I think they have another major set of training coming on Friday. So they'll be able to help people get through the initial application and also help them file their continuing claims. So they'll be trained and ready to help with that. Also, you may have noticed, or some people may have noticed today, anyone who has already filed for PUA were receiving financial determinations today in their dashboard. So for those people who are filed successfully and they can get into their dashboard, there is additional information there. And we have guides up on our website that actually just went up about 30 minutes ago. So the caller who did not, it sounds like she did not submit her claim yet, she can try going to those guides on the www.uc.pa.gov/PUA, P-U-A. And there are now three guides up there that take people through filing. So those are the options to get assistance when filing your PUA claim.
I hope that helps, Tammy.
Tammy, thank you very much for that call. Senator, we're going to go back to the questions. This is a submitted question, and this is from Bill and Beth. And the question is age a comorbidity factor for COVID? And there's a follow-up question. What shall I do on May 8th when some restrictions are lifted?
Okay, so age is a complicating factor. So the patients that we've seen, the majority of people with COVID are actually younger people between the ages of 25 and 49, our highest prevalence area. But the people who require hospitalization are those over the age of 65. So looking at the state's data today, 20% of those over age 65 to 79 were hospitalized, and those over 80 were approximately the same number, about 20%. So the older you get, the more likely you're going to have severe disease and require hospitalization. So I would recommend that anybody who has risk factors, and diabetes, hypertension, COPD like emphysema, chronic bronchitis, those patients are at the highest risk, and they should always take extra precautions. Again, washing their hands, wearing a mask in public, social distancing, all the things we've been hearing about, they should continue to do. And after the restrictions are lifted, these will continue, honestly. I think we'll be wearing a mask well into the fall. So thank you for asking.
Can I follow up on that, Dr. Powell, quickly?
Sure.
So what about traveling? And, you know, let's say Berks goes into the yellow phase. The governor has, you know, listed those red, yellow, and green phases.
Mm-hmm.
What about traveling? Will that be a risk factor for people, particularly for older people?
I would say depending on what kind of traveling they're doing.
Flying.
Airline. Yeah, mm-hmm. Airlines do concern me. I've seen some things in the news where airlines actually had pretty full flights, and that is a concern. So you need to have social distancing on that airline. And also the air recirculation with the airline will put you at higher risk to get exposed. And some people actually have higher viral loads that spread more virus. So I would caution people to get on airplanes. If they don't have to, I wouldn't. And if they can drive to a location and have just the people in the car that you've been living with, that you've all had the same exposures, that's probably wiser. And if you go to like a beach area, don't go into like a highly dense area. So again, your exposures increase with the number more people that you're in contact with.
Thank you for that. That's a question we've heard for sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Back to you, Hugh.
Okay. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Sandra. Sandra, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Senator Schwenk. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm okay. My question concerns going back to work. I was laid off in March, and I just received a phone call asking me to come back to my job. Now, I'm 59 years old, and I was concerned about going back into the workplace, into the environment. And if I do not feel comfortable going back just yet, if I refuse to go back at this point in time, will I be denied unemployment benefits?
Glad you asked that question. That is one of the questions we hear a lot of. Secretary and Susan, can you help us?
Sure, I'll start and then Susan can jump in. But Sandra, there's no one answer I can give to that question. So much of the unemployment unemployment compensation can be a very complicated bit of business. And so many of the cases are fact specific. It depends on a lot of other factors. Do you have a note from your doctor? Are you in one of the higher risk categories? What kind of work is it? Is your employer using the proper social distancing techniques and PPE, personal protective equipment that might be required? So to give a blanket answer is very difficult. It does depend on the circumstances. Susan, can you elaborate any?
Well, that's perfect, actually. It really does depend on the individual. And, you know, I'm not asking anyone to share their personal information here with us, but those sorts of things are important to know. Once you file your claim, you would want to share that with an adjudicator of ours who talks to you about, you know, what your medical situation might be. Or, you know, for example, if you have someone in your household who also is at risk, and so you would be putting them at risk if you went back to work, that's all important information for us to know, as well as making sure that you do discuss your concerns with your employer first. So as opposed to just, you know, being afraid of going and just deciding not to go, you would want to raise your concerns to them, and you need to give the employer a chance to mitigate the concerns or to work with you to make it a better situation. And at that point, you know, if nothing can be resolved and you just need to stay home from work, and you file a claim, then we would, you know, look into the details and figure out, you know, what the situation is.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sandra. I hope that helps.
Okay,
Sandra,
it does.
Sandra, thank you very much. Senator, let's go back to the callers. We're going to go to Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hello, Mary Ellen.
Hello. I was calling. Really, probably Dr. Powell could answer this. If this is an airborne virus, haven't they thought about fogging or dropping germicidal things in particularly big places where, like New York City, L.A.,
Washington State? That's a good question. So thank you for asking that. So it's not really airborne. It's carried on droplets. So they only go about 6 feet, and that's why we have the 6 feet distancing. So what we need to do is kind of protect people who are exposed to those droplets. And that's why we're having people wear masks. So when you wear a mask, you're actually protecting people around you against your secretions. And then their mask protects you against their secretions. So it's the secretions that are coming out of people's upper airway when they cough or speak or sing that kind of distributes this virus out there. It's not floating around in the air for a long distance.
All right. Then thank you for asking. You're telling me it's more like TB was, tuberculosis.
Yeah, actually, TB is usually carried on smaller particles. This is kind of like the between the flu and TB. So you're right. So it's kind of like measles and tuberculosis. They all have the same sort of droplets. So you're right. It's not really out there in the air, though. So if you're out there in like a park and you're by yourself, you're not really exposed to the virus at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for asking that.
And I do want to say the hospitals are doing an excellent job. I was in I Am Free of the Virus. I was there over Easter. And they are doing a remarkable job.
Well, I'm so glad that you recovered. Fabulous.
Yes,
I'm glad to hear that you had
it was a hard situation. But, you know, it was wonderful the way they worked and where they overworked because the kitchen helped. Cannot serve the food to the patient. The nurses have to do that now,
right.
Which gives them added responsibility.
That's true.
putting on robes and gloves and off, and the next patient putting it on and all. I mean, I really felt for them.
Yeah,
but
we appreciate your thanks. That's lovely. Thank you very much for saying that.
You're welcome. God bless you all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And you all,
Mary Ellen. Thank you very much for your call. Senator, let's go back to the callers. We're going to go to Karen. Karen, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Senator Schwenk. This is Karen McCree. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Karen? Haven't talked to you for a long time.
I know, and I really just want to thank you for these town halls. I have appreciated them both.
Great.
And my question was really answered. It was an unemployment question, and I keep taking this information and sharing it with everyone. I think my question was answered after hearing the statistics and hearing how many people have filed claims and how much work has been done, and with especially the PUA, because that affects one of my daughters. And so she did get the letter today that you guys we're just talking about. She got the update, which is showing on her dashboard. So that kind of explains that. Senator Schwenk, though, one other thing that I'd like to mention, I know I'm in Philadelphia now, and even looking at Berks, because we're still red, and then Berks is still red.
Right.
And considering moving forward with businesses, and this is only in considering for small businesses like minority hair salons. I saw something that showed that some of them have been opening up for essential workers only and allowing only one person who can present paperwork that shows that they are essential workers, and then allowing them to come into the salon and get their hair done based only on that factor, because Black women don't traditionally do their own hair.
Mm-hmm.
And those that are working in hospitals in these environments where they are providing these essential, they are considered essential workers, are now, and maybe the doctor can address this too, they're not shampooing their hair and these same droplets are then staying on their hair, especially where they're not covering it. And is that something maybe the governor would consider, where they're only one coming in, I mean, keeping, you know, with the same protocols and all of that, is that something to consider?
That's an interesting question. Dr. Powell, do you want to start on that?
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're, I haven't heard that they were allowing that. So that's
an interesting concept
to me.
Yeah.
It was in Maryland. That's where I saw it. It was in Maryland.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not
so
the case
that makes
in Pennsylvania.
Sense.
I know that. So thank you
okay.
for clarifying that.
For clarifying that,
mm-hmm.
too. I would like to see them get back to allowing some hair salons and barbers to allow, you know, limited access. I know personally I could use a haircut. I know my husband could. So I think we're all in the state that we would like to get our hair done. But I haven't heard that they were going to allow anything like that. But I would support that in a limited rollout fashion, again, with limited numbers of people in the salon, everybody wearing masks. I think there's a way to roll that out slowly and safely, and I would support them considering that.
Thank you.
Yes, they only did it for essential workers, and people had to bring their mask in, and only one mm-hmm. stylist and one customer in at a time. That was it.
Thanks, Karen, for that information. Dr. Powell, that's, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that. I know we hear a lot of people who are talking about that issue, that they'd very much, and I would myself as well, like to be able to visit my
yep.
hairdresser. You know, the expertise that you have perhaps will be helpful in reaching out to, the administration and Department of Health to provide the guidelines so that mm-hmm. we can start getting those sorts of things that are so important in our lives to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, I'd like to
I
see
agree.
It too.
And,
thank you.
And trying to open up small businesses again and doing
mm-hmm.
that in a safe fashion. I'd like to see some of that start to happen. I agree.
Karen, thank you. Much for your call, Senator. We're going to go to another submitted question.
Okay.
This is from John. John, first of all, I want to compliment Anne Marie from your office in helping
me
in helping John with his unemployment issues. She listened intently and asked questions, and she really listened to my concerns. I'd been waiting over 5 weeks, and finally last week received a UC deposit and two more this week. Here's my question. I have not received the federal $600 compensation as of yet. I also spoke to six other people today, and not one of them have received it either. Why not? What is going on?
I know Susan can speak to the timing on those. Susan?
Sure. I'll explain how the timing works with it, which may be the issue. Other than that, there may be a few other things I can suggest. So the $600 payment pretty much does go to everyone. It's not something you have to apply for separately, or be approved for. So when a payment is made, your regular UC payment is made, the $600 payment then gets submitted to our Pennsylvania Treasury Department at the end of that week. So then you would receive it the next week. So for example, if I filed this past Sunday for 2 weeks of unemployment benefits, and those weeks were April 4th or later. If you're filing for a claim week, say claim week ending March 21st, the FPUC payments were not eligible to be paid for those weeks. So FPUC is only for weeks April 4th and later. So let's say, you know, Sunday I filed for my 2 weeks, and I received my two regular UC payments today on Wednesday. What will happen is on Friday, we send that information to Treasury to be paid, and then your two $600 payments you'll receive next Wednesday. So it's about a one-week gap. The longest that the gap between regular benefits and the $600 benefits would be is about 12 or 13 days. That's only for people who file at the very end of the week for their regular benefits, which is rare. Most people file on Sundays, Mondays, early in the week. So depending on those circumstances, other than that, there's very limited circumstances where people don't receive their FPUC payments, such as individuals who may have had an overpayment and they have penalty weeks to serve, so they would not receive them for any weeks there's a penalty week. There's some situations where your amount may be reduced to zero, and you don't really receive an unemployment payment, but you still receive the $600 payment. That would be in a situation, for example, where you would have had a payment, but let's say you had federal withholding taken out and that took the whole amount, or you have a child support obligation and that took your amount to zero, you would still then get the $600 payment afterward. If some people worked too much that week and their earnings were excessive, so they weren't really considered unemployed that week, they would not receive the $600 payment for a week when their earnings were excessive. So there's a few of those different scenarios. Otherwise, the payment should be made, but it's received by you about a week later than you received the regular unemployment payment.
Thank you for that, Susan. I hope that's helpful. These have been really good questions so far, and I'm hopeful we can get to as many as possible. But for those of you who are on the line that are worried about unemployment and you're a constituent of the 11th District, if you have a question that we don't get to or hasn't been answered, please fill out the form at my website, www.senatorschwenk.com/contact. It's important to use that form because it collects some of the information that we need to bring forward to the Department of Labor and Industry. And if you don't have internet access, then just leave a message on our phone, 610-929-2151. I had to squeeze that in, Hugh. Thank you.
Oh. That sounds good. Senator, again, the phone number is 610-929-2151.
Correct.
Okay. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Hector. Hector, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hello, Hector.
Good evening, Senator. How are you, Senator?
I am good. How are you feeling?
Well, I'm in my 49th day of isolation, but that's not the question. I have a very important question. So our radio station at Albright, which I've been at 35 years, that serves the Latino community, has not been on, our DJs have not been on for about 6 weeks. I'm concerned that in the city, the coronavirus is really starting to spread in the Latino community. Are there any other ways to get to commercial radio stations where they have to put more public service announcements or TV programs, which are reaching to them? Because I know it's become very difficult for our mayor, Eddie Moran. I'm just wondering if there's more avenues to get out to our community and let them know how important it is to wear the mask, to do the distancing, all this education that needs to go out. I'm just concerned because I got numbers today that are really scary.
Yeah, they're very concerning, Hector, and I've been focusing on that myself, too. The fact that this seems to be more of an issue with minority communities, and specifically for Berks with our Latino community. And I myself have even done Facebook posts, including in Spanish, to try to reach that specific community. And here's some things that I've been trying to do, and maybe you can help me with. One is to work through the Hispanic Center. The other is to possibly reach out to BCTV, as well as to the Municipal Access Channel, which is through BCTV. We have a few opportunities. There's Channel 69, WFMZ, our local radio stations. In addition to the Spanish stations, I think would be willing to take this on. And maybe that's something that we can, continue to work on together. I'd be glad to be helpful, because if we want to get our numbers down, our increases are double digits, and they have been for the past few days. If we want to get to the next phase of this and begin getting back to a better life for all of us, we've got to look at everybody in the community, right? It's not just about ourselves. If everybody's healthy, then we're all going to be able to move forward.
That's
I'm glad
correct.
You brought this up. Thank you.
And
yes,
Judy, if I
I'll be calling you
in on that too.
Yes, Dr. Powell.
Yeah, we actually did a video in both English and Spanish for the Hispanic Center downtown, and we're working with their administration on hooking populations of people who don't have access to care into getting testing appropriately and getting the right mm-hmm. message out to that community. So we're doing some things in order to educate at least. So thank
Sounds
you.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I just need to follow up on this a little bit. One of the issues has been, we have many people in the city who work food processing plants, not just in Reading, but also outside the city. And they are essential workers. If you're helping to make food to keep all of us fed, you're considered an essential worker too. And we've been trying to work behind the scenes with the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture to make testing more available for those workers, and to figure out how we can keep them safer when they're traveling to these sites, which may be outside of the county. It's interesting how you need to go back so far to figure out how do we make the situation better and help people stay healthier. And you got to learn where people are moving. And I guess that's what contact tracing is about, Dr. Powell. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so contact tracing is when you know someone's infected and then you have to see about all the people that they had interactions with. We consider a significant interaction if you're within 6 feet for more than 10 minutes. So you're right, if people are being bused to a certain facility in order for them to work and they're in a tight environment at work, are they given the right PPE? Are they wearing masks? Is there any barriers between employees? There's things that employers can do to make the workplace safer. And if they're working like in a mushroom farm, for example, and they're really tight quarters and it's very, a small work environment, they're kind of enclosed, are there ways to make it safer? And I think that's what we have to do. I agree. Department of Agriculture can really help try to drive this forward.
We're working with them. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Back to you, Hugh.
Okay. Senator, we're going to go to the callers now. Let's go to Bonnie. Bonnie, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwankengast.
Hi.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Senator Schwank and the panel that's there. Thank you so much for doing this. I am a self-employed hairstylist, and we were shut down by the governor on the 16th of March, around that timing. And I applied for the PUA on April the 18th, which everything, I believe Susan on the other call had mentioned that it was on like the 20th, but I actually got on the site on the 18th and applied. Now, I hadn't gotten any confirmation other than saying that I had filled it in and that stuff. The letter that went out today, you said, was some confirmation and that stuff. Would that be in our dashboard, you said?
Yes, that would be in the dashboard.
Okay.
As well, you should keep your eyes peeled tonight for an email we're planning on sending, if it's not already sent, actually. I'm not sure exactly what time it's going out, with information on how continued claims filing works. We have some of those materials that I mentioned on our website now to explain. It shows screenshots and what to expect when we come to continued claims filing. And then we will be sending another email in the coming days when the continued claims filing is actually available and you can start filing for weeks and receiving your payments.
And we will receive back payment from March 16th or 17th?
Correct. Okay. I know it's been a while since you filled in the original application, but if you remember, there was one question that asked when your last day of work was. And so the application automatically backdates you to that date.
Okay. And there was some notice on the site this afternoon about if you got a letter and you may have to reapply again. What I didn't quite understand what that was all about.
I'm not sure either.
Okay.
That doesn't sound familiar. Yeah, I'm not sure what that would have been, or maybe that was something for regular unemployment. I'm not really sure that so far today, I don't know of any other communications other than the ones I just mentioned. Plus, we're putting a maintenance message up on the actual PUA application
yeah.
site
mm-hmm.
tonight. It's going to go down at 10 o'clock, and it'll be back up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when I was filing and I wanted to get a direct deposit, there was an error in the bank when you put the routing number in, and it was the wrong bank. Have those issues been resolved, or what do you do in that case where it's not the right bank? Do you continue with the routing number and just hope they figure it out, or is there something else that we need to do with that?
I know that there was that issue about 2 weeks ago that ended up becoming resolved within a day or two. So that shouldn't still be the issue. I know that when you file your weekly claims, the first time you file a weekly claim, if they don't have your direct deposit information, it will present that screen again so that you can fill it out and they can get it submitted. But I will say if ever there is a question that someone has about their direct deposit, they're not sure if it's working, et cetera, then the Pennsylvania Treasury is actually the correct place to call and make sure. Our Treasury Department has a phone line. Their phone number is 877-869-1956. And they can sort out any issues that anyone is having with their direct deposit.
Well, Bonnie, thank you very much for that question. Senator, we have another caller. Let's go to James. James, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hi, James.
James,
Hello?
Are you there? Mm-hmm. We must have lost James, so we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to John. John, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hi, John.
Hello. How are all you guys doing? Thanks
Very
for
well.
Being here, first of all.
Sure.
I have a question regarding the unemployment and the coronavirus, the package that was passed by the federal government. And that is, I was laid off almost a year ago, and my unemployment, unfortunately, was different than when my wife was unemployed, in that I only got 6 months. And what happened is when your 6 months run out, it really comes down to the money running out and not necessarily the length of time. But what happened is they said I could refile in 6 months if I'm still unemployed. So I'm wondering, do I have to go through the same process and redo that, or am I going to fall into the emergency like COVID-19 unemployment, because obviously you can't even really, you know, get much of a job at this point. Thankfully, I had open heart surgery in January. So thankfully I had it before all the, you know, the virus started. But, you know, I also wanted to say I know how hard all the nurses and doctors and nurses and all the hospital staff work and how good they were while I was in there.
That's nice to hear. Susan or Secretary, can you help on the unemployment issue?
Sure, I'll explain some of the different programs in that CARES Act. So it sounds like the program that would apply to you is the PEUC program. It's the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program. And what this program does is it just adds an additional 13 weeks to your regular unemployment claim. And it doesn't matter how long your regular unemployment claim was. Some people only have 18 weeks of benefits and some have as many as 26. It sounds like you had half a year, which was 26. So the PEUC program isn't up and running yet, but it will be soon. I can say if you're now, depending on the date that your regular unemployment claim started and expires, there's people that fall into two groups. If you're someone who simply ran out of benefit weeks, but you still have an active claim, because claims are active for 1 year. So
yeah.
If you opened it, yeah. So if it's still active, but you're out of money, what we're going to do is we're going to just set up your claim with those additional 13 weeks. For anyone who had their benefit year, like that 1 year period is over and expired, I believe we're working on trying to get a website spot where you can submit kind of like an application, and we're able to set you up from there. We had this program 10 years ago. It was a little bit different, but it was all, you know, paper-based. So now with the volume of claimants and everything, we can't really exactly do that. We're still going to have a paper application for individuals who don't have, you know, internet access. But we're hoping to get something up on the website so that everyone else can file online, and then it's a faster and easier process. So anyone who's potentially eligible, which means anyone who's run out of benefits or had a claim expire since last July, we'll be reaching out with an email if you gave us an email address, or a paper letter for those people who did not supply an email address.
So, John, thank you very much for your question. Again, Susan, if we can just, I can just follow up, Senator, if you give me the we had a follow-up question. Again, if somebody is already currently on unemployment and there's the extension applies, when does that start?
So once the program is up and running, which we think is just like in a couple weeks, then at that point, as someone runs out of benefits, the setup of the new program should be automatic. The only thing that makes it tricky is the filing of weeks, because it's biweekly filing, and sometimes at the end of a claim, it's not an even number. You're on an off number of weeks. That has always been a problem in the past. So we're trying to figure out how we might better handle that this time around. But in general, it will be an automatic setup. The only time someone will have to do something manually or you know, apply for the program is when their benefit year runs out. And that's simply one of our federal requirements. We wish we didn't have to have everyone apply. We'd like to just add the 13 weeks and make it easy. But we do have to accept applications and have people actually apply for the benefit once their regular claim year has expired.
So, Susan, did I understand you right then that if you had an active claim within the past year, you're either going to get a letter or an email regarding the additional 13 weeks? That's automatically going to come, that you're not going to have to apply for it?
That's correct. For the automatic portion is for people who have a current benefit year and are just out of money.
Okay.
The people who have to apply will be ones where the benefit year ends. So when we send the email in the letter, it's going to talk to those two populations and say, if this is your situation, this is what you need to do, or if this is your situation, you don't need to do anything.
Okay. So it might be good to, you know, remind people about your website that, you know, will be up regarding this, the PUA, as well as, you know, where else they can contact you directly.
Sure. And our website is www.uc.pa.gov. And that's how you can get to regular unemployment. That's how you can get to PUA. That is how you can get so much information. We have our website is really full of information. There's so much, and I know it's overwhelming, but it actually is a very good place, and we have a lot of frequently asked questions. Where, you know, a lot of questions we get asked are, the answers are available on our website. So you're able to see the answers there. And also in his opening remarks, the secretary mentioned how we're using Watson Virtual Assistant. We call her Paula, and she's like your Alexa, you know, but she's very specifically for unemployment. And so for those, especially for those individuals who don't have access to the internet and can't reach these frequently asked questions that I'm talking about, they can call Paula and they can ask her unemployment questions, and she will give you an automated response. Her phone number is 877-978-1295, and she's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, you know, even if you're just curious and you want to go test her out, go ask her some unemployment questions and see what she tells you.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the people that are calling us are pretty frustrated, so maybe they would like to do that. I want to remind everyone, we're trying to talk as fast as we can, but we may not have gotten to your question. And if you have a question about unemployment compensation, don't forget to go to my website, too. And we will, you know, we can help you through there as well. And that's www.senatorschwank.com, senatorschwank.com. It's pretty easy. And right away on the screen pops up the contact form for unemployment compensation. So I want you to be aware of that as well, too. We're trying to help you any way that we can.
Well, thank you very much for that question. Senator, let's go back to the callers. Let's go to Kenneth. Go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwank and guest.
Hello?
Kenneth?
Hello?
Kenneth, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwank and guest. Well, we've lost Kenneth, so we'll go back. We'll go back to the callers. Let's go to Renee. Renee, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwank and guest.
Hi,
Renee.
Hello, Senator Schwank. Thank you for doing this town hall.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about a little bit the impact of the virus on the state budget. Like, will the reduction in Pennsylvania tax income lead to big cuts in state programs in the 2021 budget?
Renee, I serve on the Senate Appropriations Committee. In fact, I'm you know, Democratic vice chair of the committee. So I've been in, you know, certainly in some conversations and meetings talking about this, and it's very concerning. We're looking at likely between estimates of about $2 billion to possibly $6 billion in reduction in our budget, a budget hole from multiple sources, not just because of, you know, tax revenue, but tax revenue from all kinds of sources, I guess it would be better said. And that's out of about a $34 billion budget. So that's a significant chunk, and which is why we're looking very actively and advocating that there could possibly be another CARES Act, a CARES Act 4.0, to help deal with the shortfalls that not only state governments are going to receive, but also county and municipal governments. And that affects a lot, you know, everything from the kinds of services we can provide to things like library funding, for example, you name it. And it's that we're certainly going to have to see how, you know, how we're going to deal with this.
Well, Renee, thank you very much for that question. Senator, let's go back to the callers. Let's go to Tracy. Tracy, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwank and guests.
Good evening, Senator Schwank. Thank you for taking my call. I just have some questions regarding what we were initially told when we shut down back in March, that it was 15 days or 30 days to flatten the curve. And listening to Dr. Powell talk about the amount of bed space that's available, haven't we done that? And at what point can we expect to start returning to the quote-unquote new normal?
Perfect question for you, Dr. Powell.
Yeah, so it is a good question. And again, this is all forecast. So right now we're seeing steady increases, but we're still in the red zone. So there are criteria that Rachel Levine has set in place for goals that we have to achieve to get back to that new normal. We have plateaued, but again, at Reading, we have close to 70 people in-house currently with COVID, and we have more people coming every day. So we have enough capacity, but it's not like the number has dropped off significantly. And until that does, we're probably still in that just flattening, but not really seeing decreases that they're looking for in order for us to reopen things. And again, we're going to have to do this cautiously and slowly, or else we're going to be back up to that exponential growth that we were seeing initially. So we have to do it very thoughtfully. But I hear everyone's frustration. We want to get back to normal, but it's going to be a different normal than what we had before. Thank you for asking.
Tracy, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tracy.
I'm sorry, Senator.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, we use the term plateau, and we know there's an uphill climb, but there's a downhill climb too, right, Dr. Powell? It's not just like it's all of a sudden there's no more cases.
they're
no right.
Right?
That's right. Yeah, we like to see decreasing numbers before they start opening society, and that's what their goal is, to get to a certain level of new cases, and we're not quite there yet.
Right.
Well, Tracy, thank you very much for your call. Senator, let's go to Beverly. Beverly, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hi. I appreciate you taking my call. I'm a part-time cafeteria school worker, and I'm wondering, for the PUA, if you don't have all four quarters in, are you still eligible for the PUA?
And the answer to that is yes. So for PUA, what the application does in the beginning is it asks you a few questions and it looks at your wages from wage record. And if you could possibly qualify for regular unemployment, it will give you a message telling you to go do so. But if it detects that you don't have enough wages in your base year to qualify for unemployment, it will then let you proceed with the application. So the bare minimum that anyone receives on PUA is $195 a week. And then, of course, on top of that are the FPUC payments of $600 a week. So in the PUA program, it will look for your wages. If you have wages on wage record, it will use them. For people who are self-employed and don't have any wages reported to the state, they give us their information and they upload documents to support that. But in the absence of documents to support that, they will at least receive the $195 a week minimum.
Okay. And you said there was a phone number to call. Do you happen to have that?
There is. It's not ready quite yet. What we will do is we will start advertising it next week once it's hooked up and we have the staff there to staff it. There's no staff staffing it yet because we're training them this week. So we will, of course, put that on our website, but also the media outlets. We'll make sure that everyone has it, you know, for anyone who's watching the news, you know, any type of letter that we may issue. We're going to start advertising it all over the place so that people know what number they can call for assistance.
And usually the newspaper picks this up, or you can call our office, too. So,
okay.
610-929-2151.
Okay, Judy, I thank you so very much for taking my call.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for calling
great,
in.
You're doing a great job helping everybody out.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Senator, we're coming down the home stretch. We only have a couple minutes remaining in our call this evening. I know you have some concluding remarks for not only those that have joined us, but your guests as well.
Oh, of course I do. First of all, I want to thank everybody who participated tonight. I think we could do this for a couple hours. And having these guests, I mean, the questions that came in, they were really able to field them. So thank you, Dr. Powell. Thank you, Secretary Oleksiak. And thank you, Ms. Dickinson, for, you know, your help in answering these questions. You're experts and you know what you're talking about, and that's what we need. We need good information. And the other thing that I'd like to talk about quickly is, you know, the primary is coming up on June the 2nd. And if you, you know, if you're thinking about voting and you're a little bit concerned about where we're going to be in terms of the coronavirus and your exposure to maybe going out to a polling place, you can vote by mail. And you don't have to use an absentee ballot. You can use a mail-in ballot, and it's available very easily. You can go to this website, votespa.com, votespa.com. You can apply online for an application for a mail-in ballot, and then the ballot will actually come to you from Berks County Election Services. My husband and I did it. We got it in 2 days after we applied online. It couldn't be more convenient. All you have to do is fill it out, put a stamp on it, and send it back. And then you have your opportunity to vote. Of course, you know, polling places will be open. Some of them will be changed. And I expect more information will be coming out from the county on that. But I just wanted to remind everybody that the date to file for a mail-in ballot is May 26th.
you have some time, but don't forget about it. Get it done and get it in the mail, and then you've fulfilled your civic duty there. So I certainly wanted to mention that as well.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. And just as a reminder, if individuals need to contact your office, they can go on your website and fill out your form. The form is available to contact your office in addition to your phone. The form is on www.senatorschwank.com contact. And again, if you don't have internet access and you need to reach Senator Schwank, it's 610-929-2151. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you, everyone.